Hello and welcome to Linoleum Knife.
Sing the theme music.
First, what is the theme music?
The song that you refuse to put on the front of the piece thing now.
I can't sing
You
that.
Can do it. Why don't we have the theme music?
Because we don't.
Why?
Because that's a thing I haven't figured out yet. Look, we're in both ears
now. We used
now,
to have theme music, and I think people are getting confused
but
with all
too,
these changes.
It was too loud, so we stopped doing the theme music. I have to figure out
sing it.
How to... I don't know how.
Bum,
you sing
bum,
it.
Bum, 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 bum,
oh, oh, I thought bum, you wanted bum, me to sing the Mastodon bum, song.
I don't know. La, da, 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 da.
Dum, 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 bum, 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 bum.
There you go.
Dum, dum.
Yeah.
Okay. So, hi.
So, when is that going to be fixed?
I'll get to it.
We're in stereo now. That's a good thing that's fixed.
Well, we're in mono, but we're in two ears.
Well, that's the same thing as stereo. Two ears equals stereo.
Okay, fine. So that's the deal. Across the table from me
No,
is,
when is this theme music going to get
Dude,
fixed?
I don't know, all right? The
why,
two ears
why
thing
you,
was
why
challenging
Why are you failing
enough?
At the technical aspects of this podcast?
Because I'm not
the
getting
The only reason
any
I agreed to
home.
Do it was if you could make this sound beautiful.
And
for me.
And it does. It just doesn't have a theme song.
My talents at talking are going to waste without a perfectly executed technical
okay.
side.
Well, we'll look back on these early episodes and laugh.
You will.
Yeah, well, I plan to. Mm. I'm not laughing now. I'm crying on the inside. Anyway, across the table from me is Movies.com film critic Dave White.
And you're Alonzo Duralde.
I am.
And you're the Movie Line DVD columnist. And you're some other things. What else are you?
If you don't know, I'm not going to tell
you. I always forget what you do.
God.
Well, we work in different rooms of the house, and I pretend you're not here.
I'm yards away. I don't know how you could keep up with what I do. I'm an author.
That's right. Of a book that we're not going to talk about again until late October of this year. I'm not even going to pretend. We're not even going to say the title.
Because we're all sick of it.
The title is done for 10 whole months, yes. At least 10 months. Like when the stores start putting out their Christmas decorations in 2011, then we can start hinting at the fact that you wrote a book in
about,
2010.
Yes,
about some things that are... Shh.
I didn't
say
it.
Say the word. Don't
I
even
didn't.
Say the word. You used a
you,
word.
No, you
the
said
title.
It. What decorations did you say were going to go up?
Those.
Yeah, no, you said it first. Yeah. So shh. You shush. Anyway.
And plus, here's the other thing. Because yes. You were gone so often in December, that's why there was no podcast.
Yes. That, and then
you were gone.
And then
and
because Dave said that we wouldn't do another episode until we figured out how to be in both of your ears.
Right. I demand quality. For the people to listen to.
So the people had to wait until now for us to finally
right.
have another episode.
Right.
But we do. We're back.
And you still haven't seen all the movies you need to see.
I have not. December was busy for me because of the book that we're not going to talk about. So I'm still catching up. But we already have
you still
new...
haven't. What have you not seen?
What have I not
list
seen?
List the things you have not seen.
I haven't seen True Grit.
Correct.
I haven't seen The Fighter.
Right.
I haven't seen Blue Valentine.
Right.
I haven't seen Somewhere.
Correct.
I haven't seen White Materials.
Right. Material. Just
material.
One white
material. Okay, fine. Those are the main ones, I think, that I haven't seen.
Well, no one actually cares about White Material. I mean,
no,
in the real
you.
World, no
just
one cares
you.
About it. It's just me that cares about White
yes.
Material. Yes. And all people who care about good movies
mm-hmm.
should also care about White Material.
Yes. So, yeah. So I'm still catching up.
You
but
seen
hey,
Summer Wars, which just
But came that's
out.
A 2011 movie.
No, it came out in December in New York. It's
well,
just now hitting Los Angeles.
Okay, fine.
And then it's going to slowly kind of roll out across the country.
And if
and
you're
go to DVD real fast.
If you're living in Dallas, Texas, and you want to see this movie, Summer Wars, it is screening later this month at the.
How do you know where things are happening?
Well, it's playing at the Kid Film Festival.
Oh,
which
okay,
I wanted
okay.
to give a shout out to my
oh, I see.
My peeps at the USA Film Festival.
Peeps.
I'm sounding echoey for
peeps.
Some reason. I don't know what that's about.
Peeps.
My marshmallow peeps.
You're sounding doofusy with the
okay.
word peeps.
No, all right. I think
echoey is not. It's that's the least of your problems.
I think somebody moved a knob, but I think I'm better now. Okay. Now it doesn't sound like I'm at the bottom of a ravine, or less so. Anyway.
Is there a weird high pitched noise happening with you now?
No, just this sort of echo,
no?
echo.
All right. Okay. I'm not feeling an echo.
No. Well, you don't have headphones.
I'm not wearing headphones.
Okay.
So we are going to talk about three movies that we have seen.
Yes, that are new or newish releases.
Right.
Season of the Witch.
That's number one.
Which opened nationwide this past Friday, January 7th. Mm-hmm. Country Strong, which...
And that's totally number two.
Which expanded to a national audience on December 7th. And then Another Year, the new Mike Leigh film, which
that's
opened...
British.
December 31st in limited markets, and it's probably slowly expanding. So, Season of the Witch, go.
Yeah. Season of the Witch is the little-known holiday that lands between New Year's Day and Valentine's Day. You take a break for MLK, and in the middle of that is the Season of the Witch, parts one and two. The potions and spells and sorcery and wigs and... devils and ninja zombie monks and Satan fighting Nicolas Cage.
Yes.
Mano a mano. And Ron Perlman headbutting Satan.
Satan. No, that's right. And Nicolas Cage has willowy, shiny hair.
It's not shiny. It's straggly and unwashed because he's in the Crusades.
True. But it did
he's battling
it
everybody in
the
Crusades. Here's my favorite part.
At the beginning?
Well, at the beginning. There's a whole montage. Well, the story is like this. Okay, first I'll back up a little bit. He is a warrior, like this alpha warrior.
He and Ron Perlman.
Ron Perlman.
Ron Perlman, and, who is the...
Frankenstein. He plays Frankenstein.
Who's the guy in Top Gun? He's the goose to Nicolas Cage's
it doesn't
Maverick.
Matter. Ron Perlman plays Frankenstein in every movie.
Kind of.
Basically.
You should talk.
What?
You've got a big distinctive look like Ron Perlman does.
Yeah, but he's 9 feet tall.
Yeah, but people think Ron Perlman is hot. People think you're hot. It's just not...
Why are we... When did this suddenly become about me being hot?
Because you're talking about Ron Perlman being a Frankenstein, and
yes.
Some people might say, gosh, Dave White, you might not have a lot of stones to throw at that glass
that
house.
I didn't mean he was ugly. I just meant he looked like Frankenstein.
All right, just checking. Go on.
I don't look like Frankenstein. I'm adorable.
Yes, go on.
Now you made me lose my train of thought. My feelings are hurt. You tell the rest of the plot.
Okay, so they're battling through the Crusades, and what Dave is referring to is
my favorite
part
happens at the beginning when there's a montage of the Crusades. And it's like, here's the battle of the Gorgoroth, and here's the battle of, you know, Gilgalroob, and here's the battle of, you know, Flibbity Flib, and every single one of them looks exactly the same. Like they were all shot pretty much probably
on the same day.
On the same day, on the same tract of land. You know?
Except one time it's snowing.
Right.
That's the different battle.
And so that's great. And that's at the very beginning, that's what happens in the movie. And you know kind of what movie you're in for after that. Because everything looks the background looks very, you know, green screeny and cheap. And they go home. From the Crusades, they're fed up. They don't like God anymore. They don't want to kill people for God.
Because they have to kill women and children.
Right, they have to kill innocent people instead of other holy warriors.
Saracens or whatever.
And they go home to their little village, and the Black Plague has come, they are upset about that. And then the people in the town are like, oh, this witch did it. She made the plague. So they go to the cardinal. And the cardinal is played by Christopher Lee. You don't recognize Christopher Lee.
He's got a big
all. He's
tumor
got a big
on his
tumor
face.
Great. And then he's like, you must take the girl to this faraway abbey. They don't really say why they have to take him to the faraway abbey, do they? Like, why do they have to go there?
Because the very, very beginning of the book, we see the priest with the special book, and he reads the spell that makes the witches.
Oh, you have to go to that priest because he's the only one that knows the spell.
Well, the monks at the abbey have the last copy of the book.
Oh, yeah, that's right. But then the plague gets to them, and the devil gets to them, too, and they become dead undead zombie monks.
Right, like devils go in through their nose.
Yeah, devils flying through their nose and they fight and stuff.
Yeah.
So basically they've got to take this girl who is pretty much a witch. Like, it's not like she's innocent or anything. She kind of is a witch.
Every time the
camera points to her face, she's smirking and sucking blood off of her own fingers sort of erotically. And it's basically sort of like it's get her to the Greek. They have to get her to the Greek to be exercised. or to be de-witchified or put on trial. But it turns out she's possessed by the devil. Well, she's worse than a witch.
You're just going to spoil this whole thing. Okay, that's... See,
no
for
one
me,
cares
all right, fine.
If that's a spoiler.
Okay, well, if we're going to talk about that...
All right.
The twist kind of makes the movie for me because I was thinking... Because, no, when you think of, like, the whole history of the church and witchcraft and how it was all crap for the most part.
There's an actual plot twist that makes the movie.
Well, because I was thinking, all right, they can't get away with her actually being a witch because then they're sort of justifying centuries of, you know, like, wrongful executions and torture at the hands of the church. But then when it turns out, nope, she's not a witch, she's possessed by the devil, it's like, oh, okay, well, I didn't see that coming.
Oh, so yeah, because okay. That's equally plausible.
Well, we're not talking about... This is a Nicolas Cage movie.
There is real demonic possession. No,
yeah. Verisimilitude did not enter into it at all. I'm just saying at least she wasn't a witch.
Right. She just was Satan.
She was possessed.
Satan.
Yes.
She was little Miss Satan.
Yes.
And they bring her to the abbey and she's, you know, there's a big fight and zombies and... then Nicolas Cage and Ron Perlman have to battle the actual Satan.
Yes.
And the plot twist is not what makes the movie. What makes the movie is all the background of the movie, which is weed, role-playing games, and a lot of black metal videos. There is so much grim, frostbitten forestry in this movie that I was... intoxicated by its beauty.
I felt like I was watching somebody play D&D, but not in the boring Lord of the Rings way. Like
there's nothing boring about Lord of the Rings.
Oh God, awesome.
That's
about a topic
Lord of the
for
Rings.
Another podcast, but
a podcast where everything you say will be wrong.
Yeah, you just tell yourself that. Anyway, Season of the Witch. It's stupid, but I had fun.
But totally entertaining.
Yeah. So,
and the people who say it's not stupid in the good way they weren't looking at the right movie.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a movie with the line, we're going to need more holy water.
Yeah.
I mean, they know what movie they're making.
Like, they're battling the devil, and they call back a joke from the beginning of the Crusades where it's like, the first guy to kill all the infidels, I'm buying the drinks. You know, like, they alternate between sounding like they're in sort of like this middle school pageant about, like, the Dark Ages and then sounding like they're in, hey, dude, where's my car? Like, it's the kind of, like, there's this whole mix of, like, no one was paying attention to the consistency of how things were written in the script. So that's enjoyable, and I'm all for this movie.
Well, all right. So, yeah, it's dorky, but it's real fun. So, yeah.
Nice segue. Into Country Strong.
There. Okay.
That's what you just did, right? That was your Country Strong?
Not really, segue? But okay.
You were just filling space.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't have dead air. Just talking to hear yourself talk.
Yeah, stay away.
You know, you could edit. You don't have to just talk to hear yourself talk.
I was just trying to...
If you were technically proficient enough, you
that
could
was,
just
I
edit,
could edit that if I out felt there. Like it. Yeah. That was just a little button to say, okay, we are done with Season of the Witch.
Nice, nice button.
Now let's move on, shall we, to Country Strong.
Not as fun as Season of the
Not
Witch.
Not as fun as Season of the Witch, sadly, no. But
take it away, Valley of the Dolls fan.
Yeah.
You're the dude who
okay.
knows.
Okay, yeah, it is, as Dave called it on movies.com, this is Grand Ole Opry of the Dolls. Gwyneth Paltrow stars as a rising young country singer, or I mean, she's a star at this
she's
point.
Not rising.
She's not rising.
She's
a star.
She's Shania Twain level.
Yeah, she's like a big deal, and the movie begins, she's in rehab, and she has become very close to Garrett Hedlund, who is the hot singer-songwriter
Naked.
Yeah.
They're banging in rehab. Like, he's the worst
rehab
employee ever.
And so when her pushy husband, Tim McGraw, decides that he's going to cut her rehab short because she's got to get back on the road, she says that she wants Garrett Hedlund to be her opening act. Because
he's a singer-songwriter.
I said that. He's a singer-songwriter.
Oh, they call him the next Towns Van Zandt.
Right.
But he's not.
Well, no,
he's
of course
just,
not.
You know, because Towns Van Zandt was not. Super hot. Like
No. Yeah. Tim McGraw, meanwhile, wants Leighton Meester, who's this like beauty queen, to open on the tour.
Taylor Swift.
Kind
of. Essentially.
Yeah. But when he goes to see her perform, she like freezes and Garrett Hedlund has to jump on stage and kind of come to her rescue. So they both go on tour with Gwyneth Paltrow. And then you would think from the ad campaign that this movie is all about Gwyneth Paltrow and how she overcomes blah, blah, blah.
And becomes country strong.
And becomes country strong.
Right.
Or is country strong or whatever. But it's as much about Garrett Hedlund and Leighton Meester as it is about Gwyneth Paltrow. And she ain't all that country strong. She's kind of a mess.
She's a country crock.
They took her out of rehab too early. They pulled her out of the oven before she was done. Yeah. And
she's not ready to go back on the road. She's not ready to sing. She's not ready to promote the album. She's not ready to tour. She's not ready to do anything except carry around a literal wounded bird
in a box. In a cigar box.
I'm not making that up.
Yeah, metaphor that, alert.
There's a tiny little bird that it's a metaphor bird and it sits in the box. And every single person in the movie gets a turn at holding the bird in the box. And my favorite person who holds the bird is Tim McGraw, because they don't let him sing at all. He's the one actual country singer
in the movie,
and he doesn't get to sing. And
he's probably on the soundtrack.
But he is the one who is holding the bird in the most scenes. Like
he's the bird wrangler.
She's so frail, Gwyneth Paltrow's character, that she's like, I can't even handle this bird today. You gotta be the bird's papa. And handle the bird, carry it around everywhere we go. Everywhere we go. To the press conference.
On the road with the
bird.
On the
road, in the bus.
In the hotel.
At the Piggly Wiggly, at the Denny's. It doesn't matter where we are. You keep that bird in your hands.
Because it's symbolic.
And you actually see Tim McGraw holding this little box with the bird in it in a lot of scenes.
And feeding it with an eyedropper.
Feeding it with an eyedropper. You're like, doesn't he have enough problems? Like, he's like this driven
tour manager, and he's got to deal with this stupid bird.
Like if he really was that attentive to something, you would think it would be to
the wife,
Gwynny herself. But no, it's like he's suddenly, you know, he's charged with the care and nursing of this wounded baby bird.
One of my favorite parts is when they're in bed not having sex, and Gwyneth Paltrow says, "Honey, am I talented?" And you just know Tim McGraw's thinking, oh, God, I've been here a million times.
No, that's not true. Do you ever think Faith Hill ever questioned one moment of her life or talent?
A good point. Probably not.
She did not.
That would require introspection.
She's country strong. You can tell. You can tell who wears the pants in that house. I saw them at Fred Siegel once.
Oh, yeah?
I was in there, I don't know, probably buying a Christmas present or something for somebody. They walked in and they were looking at all the, you know, $500 Japanese blue jeans or whatever.
Right.
It was funny because the Fred Siegel people were like, we don't know who you are. You know, like, but you know, they always do. But he just followed her around.
Really?
Like, he's the, yeah.
The whip dog.
Well, you know how it is, like, guys, you know, chicks like that, they're like pretty and blonde and super in charge of their stuff, and the guys are like, yes, dear. To be fair,
I would imagine most wives lead most husbands through Fred Siegel. We're not talking about,
I suppose,
you know, they weren't at the gun shop, you know.
Yes,
Fred Siegel,
right?
You know, give her a break.
So I don't think that scene has any bearing on Tim
okay
Rose,
just a thought.
I think she knows where she's going.
No question. So for me, the real revelation of this movie is Garrett Hedlund, because
he really sings. They all really sing. Here's what's great. Gwyneth Paltrow really sings. Garrett Hedlund really sings. Leighton Meester really sings. Yeah. They all sing really well. And the songs are okay. The songs are good. Like, if you like contemporary country music, and if you don't, then you're not going to like any of it. But if you like contemporary country music, they're good songs.
And I think
they're the only good thing about the movie.
Yeah, but
it's a dumb movie.
But Hedlund,
except for the parts where Gwyneth is drunk. Well, those are great because she's waving the bottle around, and you get to see her on this one scene where they've lost her for the day, and they find her in a biker bar, and she's dancing on the bar, and they're all like going, "Woo, baby!" Yeah. And she's like, "These are my new friends."
Yeah, didn't and buy that for a
she's
second.
Dr. Roxo is what's happening in this.
She was when I reviewed it for HitFix, I said she looked like she was Grace Kelly trying to play Ma Kettle.
Right.
Like, I didn't buy because she's just got too much of that sort of patrician veneer.
Here's the other thing that's weird. They don't let her sing until nearly the end of the movie. She does that little acapella bit for the Make-A-Wish kid halfway through. But that's
she's got a good car. That's not a car.
Kinda, but
it's like unplugged.
But she, yeah,
but she gets the big song.
She don't get any big. She don't get any big numbers until the end of the movie.
But I really did like Garrett Hedlund, and I thought that he had he has this sort of like Brad Pitt.
He's very charismatic, he's going to be a big star.
Yeah, and which you would not get as much from Tron Legacy, which we both like, but he's not nearly as dynamic in that movie as he is.
I was kind of impressed with Leighton Meester too, and I don't watch Gossip Girl, and I've really only ever seen her on Fashion Police. as a don't.
Yeah. As the anti Blake Lively.
How resentful is she of Blake Lively?
Oh God.
Vogue magazine and every fashion person in the world cannot stop kissing Blake Lively's ass. And then Leighton Meester goes up to some event and she's like, "Look, everybody, I'm wearing something avant-garde too." And it's a disaster. Work. Yeah.
Poor thing.
It's great.
So she
redeems it all by being pretty good in this movie. Yeah.
So we wish her good things. And
I'd rather hear her sing country songs in a movie than like Miley Cyrus.
Well, okay.
And I've seen all the Miley Cyrus movies that have been made.
What, both of them?
Three of them. I've seen the concert movie. I've seen the Hannah Montana movie that was narrative where she lives with Rascal Flatts on that porch.
Yes.
And then
the last,
and then whatever that one, the last song where the kid sets a church on fire.
Yes.
Yeah, whatever that was about.
Where she's all Danish death metal.
Something. Yeah, she's kind of gothy at the beginning of the movie, which is pretty hilarious.
And that's pretty cool. okay, so let's wrap up with...
Not good. Country Strong, not good.
Yeah, no, not
good
so
songs, good Garrett Hedlund, good Leighton Meester.
Yeah.
Gwyneth Paltrow sings really nicely.
Watch it on HBO.
Go see it for that bird.
Some Sunday afternoon.
Go see it for the bird. The bird's really great.
For the stupid bird. Okay, we're going to wrap up with another year, which is the new Mike Leigh movie, and it's real good.
And it's a bummer.
Yes, but it's also funny.
But how is it funny? Where is the funny stuff?
I don't remember there being funny. It's funny in the sort of...
I think this is a good movie, by the way. I'm not complaining about it.
Yeah, I think it's funny in the observed human behavior kind of way.
I just think it's really sad.
It is sad.
There's nothing funny about it.
It's cringy, but it's also... I thought it was funny at times. I wasn't laughing at anybody. I wasn't mocking anybody. But I think there is humor in the film just in the way that they interact with each other.
The only things that I think...
Well, explain what it's about. Explain what it's about.
Okay, so Jim Broadbent and what's her name?
Ruth Sheen.
Ruth Sheen. They are an old married couple. They've been married like 40 years or something. Yeah. And they are...
He's a geologist and she's a therapist.
Right. And they're almost unnaturally happy. Like they're that old couple who are content.
They go to the community garden
every
week.
And they do their gardening and they, you know, cook meals and they have like
exotic gourmet.
They travel and they're just, they've got an adult son that
loves
them and he's a lawyer.
Like a public advocate. They're really, good guy.
They're a very happy couple. They've been happy their whole lives. But here's the part about the movie that I don't get. In spite of the fact that I like the movie a lot, how is it that these happy people only know super miserable sods?
But not all.
Yeah, everyone except the son.
The main ones that we see
are
in their
brutally
lives
unhappy.
A big mess. But remember, they have the picnic that Leslie Manville shows up late to, and there's non-mess people there.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
There's the black coworker with the baby.
Those people don't get any play, though, in the movie.
No, the movie focuses on like their friends and relatives who are the most messed up.
Ultra-saddos.
Exactly, and how this couple has to sort of like, you know, cope with them and accommodate
them. For a full year.
Yeah, basically. Like, it's not until the last scene of the movie, until the therapist finally says, "I think you should get professional help." You know, which they've all needed all along. This motley crew of friends and family.
The thing I like the best is the moments where they're sitting around talking about how great their lives are, and all their bummer friends are sitting there going, "Like, well, f you, man." I could have gone to New Zealand and Papua New Guinea too, if I'd had some money and someone who loved me. And what's great about Jim Broadbent and, God, what is her name?
Ruth Sheen.
Ruth Sheen is that they kind of sit there sort of like, yeah, our lives are fantastic. You know, well, it's so great being us. And they just talk about it like, and we didn't even have to, what was the thing? We went around the world and we didn't even have to go cheaply. Didn't they say that close to the end when they're having the conversation with the, yeah. So like, they're almost bragging about
They're borderline irritating.
They're sort of smug in a way.
They don't, but they're not, I mean, the movie sort of lets you decide, are these people jerks or are they really nice and they're just surrounded by these people who are messes, or are they surrounded by messes because they need them to feel better about themselves?
Yeah.
You know, it's open to interpretation, which I thought was...
They basically roll their eyes at each other in front of these friends. Leslie Manville.
Which we would never do.
Leslie Manville is so...
Oh, she's great.
It's the kind of, like...
She should be on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Cringy, horrible person, like needy, desperate, sad, too talkative. The kind of performance that makes you watch her and think to yourself... Have I ever behaved that way in front of anybody?
Yeah. Is this because what my friends think?
If I have, I hope they all will band together and kill me. Because her performance as the most desperate, needy friend they have is painful to watch. I can see that some people would look at it and say it's kind of an overacty sort of like, you know, one note sort of performance, but I thought it was good, and at the same time, I never want to see her be that character again.
Well, yeah, but I totally bought it. I mean, she felt organic in the world of the movie and like a recognizable human being, you know?
Yeah.
So, I loved it. I thought it was great.
It's really, really a bummer.
It is a bummer, but it is, you're selling it all wrong. It does have humor in it.
Oh, I love bummers.
I know you do, but not everyone does. I think if you think back on it, you'll remember there are times that you laughed during the movie.
Yeah, at the times when they're sort of bragging about how awesome their life is. Because then the other people in the movie are like, oh my God, will you just shut up? I've got cancer. You know, like it's this whole.
They're not that. Okay, I think
you're. It kind of is that bad, though. Like the drunk, there's that other friend who's the drunk.
Right.
And he's just, he's clawing at Leslie Manville, like trying to get, just wants to touch her one time. Like
and she's not having
and
it.
And she hates him, you know, and then the son comes home with a girlfriend and Leslie Manville hates the girlfriend. And everyone in the movie is effed up.
Yeah, Leslie Manville finally gets her car, and then all she does is get lost and pay tickets and have it towed.
It breaks.
It's just one thing after another. But it's really good. You should see it.
It's a slice of British life that you don't want to look at. The British life you want to look at is the King's Speech, where it's royalty, attractive royalty, cuddly, attractive royalty in great vintage clothes.
Mm-hmm. And who never existed.
The best Fortnum and Mason tea that money can buy.
Yes. Royalty that pretend like they don't speak German when they totally do, as we found out.
So, yeah. Thanks to our friend Mark Davis, who laid it all down about how every single thing in the King's Speech is
a big, fat
total lie. Everything is a lie,
yes,
essentially, in the King's Speech. It sort of kind of happened that way, but mostly it didn't.
Yeah. No. And it's funny, we were talking the other day about how, like, Oscar season, the way that...
But again, in spite of that, I just don't care, because that's the kind of British movie I like. And those are the kind of royalty in British movies that I really like.
We were talking about how an Oscar season, the way that one studio will try to sabotage another studio's, you know, historical dramas by pointing out that it's full of crap. And, like, everybody acknowledges that The Social Network is not exactly what happened, but no one seems to care.
Right.
So, you know, I think there's people that annoys people up to a certain extent, and then they're like, eh, whatever, I like the movie.
Yeah, it doesn't annoy me at all. I don't care if things are real in movies. I don't care if the – hey, someone's calling us. Yeah. Pick up the phone. Hey, guess what? You're on our podcast. Who is it?
Gray, we're recording a podcast, and now you're on it.
Ooh, fine.
This is Gray Drake, co-host of the Popcorn Mafia, and previous owner of our...
podcasting equipment.
Yes.
We didn't make her call on cue or anything.
Jesus Christ and my mother.
What do you want?
Also, I'm calling because we're fabulous people that need to go do fabulous things, but I'll let you get back to recording.
All right, we'll call you back when we're done.
Okay, good.
Bye, sweetie.
I think you should have let that call play out. What did she want?
She wants to make plans with us.
What if she wanted to do something exciting right now that would make us stop recording this podcast?
I know what she's
talking
about.
Are we almost at the 30-minute mark
anyway?
We're
just about there.
Okay, great. We're done.
Yay! Okay. So thank you for joining us. tune in to our friend's podcast, Gray Drake's.
There's going
to
be...
Mafia.
Yeah.
The Comedy Couch with Dennis and Tony. Blowhard with Malcolm Ingram.
And whatever else.
And other ones.
If we forgot you, sorry.
Sorry.
Yeah.
But you're great, too. We love you. What?
Make sure there's theme music next week.
Yeah.
For the intro and the outro.
Do
it. No, that's the intro music. The outro music needs to be something heavy.
No.
Yeah, to balance the you and the me. Heavy.
I'm the yin and you're
heavy and harsh is how that outro music needs to be, and there needs to be it. Now that we're in stereo, we need to up the ante on the production slate and make
this
it happen.
This is a learning process. You just have to be patient.
I'm learning that you're not very good at the technical aspects.
I never said I was.
Well, get with it.
I'm just better than you, which doesn't take much.
All I'm here to do is talk,
and that's
And I'm doing that successfully.
Thank you all for joining us. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com, and we promise we'll actually be here next week.